Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, January 9th, 2019. A Sudanese protester described seeing at least one protester shot on the streets of Khartoum today.
The last group that I was with, it was in front of Omdurman Hospital, where two people have been injured by live ammunition.
And South Sudan's media authority warns an Arabic newspaper against publishing op-ed pieces on Sudan's protests.
In my opinion article, I wrote that Sudan for a long time is supporting militias against the South Sudan, and still there are militias of Thomas Dell who are in Sudan causing insecurity in South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. That is the sound of thousands of protesters on the streets of Khartoum today demanding that Sudan President Omar el-Bashir step down. One Sudanese protester says there were more violent demonstrations in the capital, and political activist Radwan Dawoon says more than 1,100 people have now been arrested in Sudan. He says he saw one person shot in the chest today as thousands of Sudanese staged those peaceful demonstrations in Khartoum.
People, when we were heading the parliament, we got a lot of tear gas from the security forces, the police, and the government militias. And then people had separated to small four groups. The last group that I was with, it was in front of Omdurman Hospital, where two people have been injured by live ammunition.
Did you see them, and what kind of injuries are we talking about?
It was right in front of us, in his left chest, down the left side, and the other one, right in his stomach.
Are these protesters doing anything to provoke live ammunition being fired at them, aside from just walking down the street and chants?
Not at all. I have lots of videos. I can send them to you, and you can see it yourself. They're all peaceful protesters. They're just chanting, and they have been faced with live ammunition and a lot of tear gas and even rocks, and it is just crazy what we see in front of our eyes.
What are they chanting?
They want the government to step down. They want Omar al-Bashir to leave. So what they were saying is, leave al-Bashir, leave al-Bashir. People want to overthrow the government, of course, peacefully. None of the protesters had thrown a rock or, you know, had anything on their hands.
So all of the protesters that you have seen, and there seem to be thousands, correct? All of them are unarmed.
Thousands, very massive protesters. Right now I'm talking to you and I'm seeing tens of army vehicles, and tens, I see them in front of me right now. It looks just like a battlefield, as I said.
And
it is crazy. The scene are just crazy.
And did you say that all the protesters are unarmed?
Yes. From the beginning, since we started these peaceful protests 19 December, all of us as Sudanese, we know this is peaceful. No one ever tried to even provoke the government by being violent, because we know when we are peaceful, it is powerful.
Who is out there and who is firing at the protesters? Can you describe what they look like? Are they in fatigues? Are they dressed just like pedestrians and are armed or what?
Unfortunately, all branches of the army and the police and the security forces are here. Sudan's regime are well known with their militias. Like the former Jenkins, now are called Rapid Forces Support. And usually they even sometimes wear police uniform, And when protesters see them, they think that they're police. Sometimes, you know, police are a little less violent than the security forces. And then they just always surprise people by firing them with live ammunition.
And when you describe those different kinds of various security forces and police that are on the streets of Khartoum, we've noticed in video from other Sudanese cities that it seems like some of the police are actually joining the rallies. Have you seen any of that in Khartoum?
Not literally joining, but they tell us, you know, we're with you, so please go ahead, don't give up. And just today, we saw a police when we tried just to ask him, why are you doing this? We are your brothers. And he replied to us with his tear on his eyes. And he said, I'm forced to do this, but I swear to God, I'm not going to fire any live ammunition. And I'm not going to fire any tear gas. I'm not going to arrest any protester. So they are emotionally defeated now.
That is 36-year-old Sudanese political activist Radwan Dawood speaking to me earlier today from Khartoum. South Sudan's media authority has warned the editor-in-chief of a Juba-based daily Arabic newspaper to stop publishing opinion pieces about the ongoing protests in neighboring Sudan. The editor says the media authority is demanding that he apologize to the Sudanese government or risk being shut down. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more on that story for VOA from Juba.
Michael Real Cristopa, editor-in-chief of the Al-Watan newspaper, says the South Sudan Media Authority, the body which regulates media institutions in South Sudan, wrote to him 2 days ago after he published opinion pieces on January 3rd, 4th and 7th commenting on the Sudan protest.
In my opinion article, I wrote that Sudan for a long time is supporting militias against the South Sudan, and still there are militias of Thomas Dell who are in Sudan causing insecurity in South Sudan. Also, still there is problem in Abyei and Kafir Kenji, and Bashir is the one causing all this. And I said I am standing with the Sudanese in their protest to change Bashir and bring somebody who could bring peace to both Sudan and South Sudan.
Real says before the media authority wrote to him, the acting Sudanese ambassador in Juba, Arsham Idris, expressed displeasure with his opinion article, describing it as an incitement of violence from a neighboring country. Real says Idris wrote a response article which his newspaper published. He says he believes the Sudanese embassy complained to the media authority, which then wrote to him.
They summoned us on the 7th of January, and we went and had a meeting with the director of administration, Elias. They told us to stop with immediate effect writing or publishing any article or opinion that has a link to the unrest in Sudan. And then the same day, I received a warning letter prohibiting Michael Christopher from writing on Sudan protest, and that there is a penalty if I don't write an apology within 72 hours.
But Real says he will not apologize to the Sudanese government because he did not commit any crime, but simply exercising his right to freedom of expression. Al-Watan 72-hour ultimatum for an apology expires today. Real says several anonymous callers have threatened him in the past few days. South Sudan in Focus contacted Sapana Abui, acting managing director of the media authority, but Abui declined to comment, saying the media authority would call a news conference should it feel the need to speak about the matter. Edmond Yakani, executive director of the Juba-based civil society group Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, says the media authority's action is an attack on the media in South Sudan.
In South Sudan, we have Sudanese who have the legitimate right to know information about what's happening in Sudan. So since Al-Watan is a media house in South Sudan, an independent one and registered one, operate legally, fails, doesn't need to keep Sudanese in South Sudan informed about political development in Sudan for their consciousness as a citizen of Sudan within the land of South Sudan. I don't think there's any problem here that request Al-Watan to be threatened or Al-Watan to be given hard time. And that's why I'm appealing in a very constructive way that the relationship between media authority and Al-Watan newspaper need a constructive dialogue between the two. And I hope that the constructive dialogue will result to a positive result that will not lead for us to see Al-Watan being shut down or for us to see any journalist of Al-Watan lives at risk.
Kwang Pal Chang, chairman of the South Sudan National Editors Forum, says by issuing warnings and threats to an independent media house like Al-Watan newspaper, the media authority has violated the Media Authority Act it is supposed to defend.
They are supposed to forward this issue to media council, media complaint councils or boards. If they are not there, what they should do is to tell, because they cannot resolve this. Since they are a Greek party, there is room. If they think that this story or this report has damaged the image of Sudan, then they follow the right procedure. What the law has said, they should follow. Not telling the government of South Sudan or the media authority to ask that media not write about events happening in our neighbor.
Pal says Sudan must respect the laws and sovereignty of South Sudan.
I feel when you read the warning letter written to Al-Watan, it's like the media authority acted as a representative of the government of Sudan, not as an institution that is supposed to regulate and act independently when addressing issues of media in South Sudan. Because to myself, media authority itself has really failed to differentiate between an opinion article and the newspaper's editorial.
Both Yakani and Pal say Sudan should stop interfering in South Sudan's media and allow the government of South Sudan to practice its sovereign rights independently. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A deadly attack occurred last night on a road in Jungle State. Officials say five women were killed when unidentified gunmen opened fire on a vehicle heading from Duck County to Bor Town. As Deng Gai Deng reports for VOA from Bor, the group was traveling home from a wedding.
Jonglei State Police Commissioner Major General Chola Tim Jonget says the gunmen opened fire on a Land Cruiser vehicle carrying 11 passengers on Bor Panyago Road as the group was returning from Poktap in Duke County after attending the marriage ceremony.
It was around 11 p.m. yesterday evening that a vehicle coming from Duke or Poktap fell into an ambush in the area of Jele, about in exactly area of Kolmerek. This ambush led into the death of five persons. They are all ladies. And then three others were injured.
Jonget says police do not have a motive for the attack, but are investigating. He says a team of police officers dispatched to the area are searching for the attackers and three people, including the driver, who are still missing.
And the surprise, one of these ambushed group, one already got dead with his gun. And no one was having a gun in the vehicle. It means that they are the one who killed themselves, with what reason, confusion, or during the struggle in getting these properties or benefits from the vehicle, maybe no one knows.
Jonget says the bodies of the women were transported to Poktap for burial. Authorities say all of the women were from Poktap but resided in Bor. The injured Aganj Majung Chwal Kwal Kwer Kudum and a 10-year-old boy named Mayen had been listed in a critical condition before undergoing surgery at Bor Civil Hospital. South Sudan in Focus saw all three groaning in pain following surgery. The man, woman, and child had large bandages covering bullet wounds on their bodies. Dr. Moses Gangrej, who is treating the wounded, says all the three patients are listed in a stable condition.
This morning we received the three patients who sustained injured in gunshot wound in Kolmerek area. Those who have sustained injuries, they are under treatment. One of them is critical, but is stable anyway because of why we are calling critical because he sustained two fractures in both legs. The child of 10 years, he sustained two gunshot wounds, one in the buttock, which came in the other side, and the second one was in the left thigh. The third woman also sustained a gunshot wound in the right thigh, but the bullet came out, but she had a lot of bleeding. But so far now, three patients are stable.
Dr. Ray says hospital administrators are making arrangements to refer the three patients for further treatment in Juba. Jonget advises other commuters not to travel at night on the Bor Panyago Road, saying it is insecure. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a retired South Sudanese UN civil servant says his country's leaders must try to unify South Sudanese. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best way to introduce change?
You have to educate. Education is the key factor to change. Without education, people will resist.
You have to educate the person. You have to educate people on the situation on ground, the implication of that situation, and if the change is to come in, what impact is that change going to create?
So the best way to introduce change is to understand the change, and you try to educate the people on what change is all about.
I think just go right ahead and do it, because there are always people who don't really like change, and there are also always people who like change and they're conducive to change. And so I think there's always going to be that one person who's like, no, I don't like this, it's different.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A retired South Sudanese senior UN civil servant says the leaders of the warring party should work to rebuild the broken social fabric of South Sudan. Professor Peter Tingwa says implementing the peace deal comes with a responsibility to reconcile communities torn apart by ethnic polarization created by 4 years of conflict.
I think the leaders are saying that this time round it will work. We all hope so. We all pray, but I cannot speak on them. So whether they are really talking from the bottom of their heart or just lip service, I don't know. But I am with the rest of the South Sudanese, feel that they are genuine this time. And whether the peace agreement is still faulty with some other things, it can work, maybe.
There are people who are sitting on the fence. For instance, there are other groups who have said, look, this agreement is not addressing the root cause of the problems in South Sudan. We don't want to be part of it. Now, how do you bring such people on board?
Well, I don't blame them. You see, peace agreements is not that everybody must be there. You know, everybody cannot be there at the same time. So given time, given the goodwill, and particularly magnanimity, that is what we are lacking here. People would like to be winners only. You see, magnanimity is missing in South Sudan from our leadership. If I make a comparison here, how the president here and his chief opponent suddenly came and things were, and see how comfortable Kenya is now. All this talk about division, tribalism has gone down. So if our people would, our leaders would accept magnanimity, and our people would refuse winner take all, that I must win, and those people must be losers, we'll get somewhere.
Professor Tingwa, you are from a generation of South Sudanese who don't look at people from the ethnic lens. How would South Sudanese have that attitude you have?
You see, this is the sad thing. South Sudan, our old generation, whenever we meet, we cry over the past. We were in Rumbek, everybody was there. And I knew everybody, where they come from, Abia or come from Kapoita or so. There was nothing like the divisions we see today. And it's sad that education, enlightenment, is supposed to do away with this ethnic, you know, tribalism or so. But in our country, it has grown instead of going down. I recall an incident when ex-president Lagu was talking to some of the young generation, and they were saying, oh, Lagu, you were the one who brought tribalism with the Kokora. And Lagu answered, he said at the time he was the president of high executive There was no single Mahdi in his office, either as a clerk, typist, or even a farash. So I think that is how the past was, you know. Now it is, if I'm one tribe, then all the assistants and cleaners, everything is from one tribe. So it's
but sad. What should we do as South Sudanese? Because the challenge is upon us to reverse the trend. Yeah. What should we do to really get out of this?
You know, I think what has been lacking is nation building. Our institutions, particularly of the culture, something have not done as much to promote unity among the people. If you hear here on the radio, oh, great Kenya, Kenya has done this, Kenya has done this. I don't hear it in Jubo Radio or our radio national to build that one. So it is the role, now that we are a state, it is the role of our government to build programs, whether it is in the curriculum of schools or so, of oneness. You see, of oneness, building on what we were before the agreement, or before SPLM, when we were in the 50s or 60s, nobody would want to say, no, I don't want to go to Nasir because that is a newer land and I'm from Kejukeji or something. There was no such thing. But now, you ask somebody from there to go there, he may not like. And vice versa. The people there, no, he cannot work here. Recently, we have heard of people saying, oh, they are from Equatoria, we don't want them here. I mean, it never was the case.
That's Peter Tingwa, a retired senior UN official, speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Nairobi last week. Tomorrow, Professor Tingwa talks about the role of education in nation building. As the vote counting drags on in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, the government has shut down the internet, saying it wants to avoid the spread of destabilizing rumors. But many Congolese say without the internet, their businesses are paralyzed. But in Rwanda, residents in the town of Rubavu say they're doing a booming business, sharing the internet with Congolese clients. Eugene Uimana recently traveled on the Rwanda-DRC border and has this report.
Congolese nationals crowd this Rubavu cyber cafe. They pay 100 Rwandan francs, or about 11 US cents, for 15 minutes of internet time. They are willing to pay the fee, they say, because they have urgent business to do on the internet. Jerome Utembo says he owns a cyber cafe in the DRC, but he came in Rwanda to do his work. He says his business is dying in these days in Congo. He says he thinks their leaders should look for other ways to prevent people from disseminating lies about the results, but let people freely use the internet. In this growing world, internet has become a life. If it goes on, we risk dying of hunger. The internet outage affects education too. Johnny Kakile is a university student. He says he and other students who can afford it are relying on the Rwandan internet to conduct their research. Kakile says now many people are using the internet from Rwanda. It is a bit difficult because you can't access it anytime you want, and it is not everybody who can afford to use it. It is really discouraging. What is a problem for Congolese is an opportunity for some Rwandans who run internet sharing businesses. Gracia Muthoni lives in Rubavu. She says here in Rubavu, the Congolese crisis brought us bread. Look now, they come for many for internet. To shut internet for them became a way of doing good business. But she says, we don't wish bad for them. May God protect them. They are our relatives. Regarding today's problems, Congolese say they have two options to the government: to bring back the internet or release quickly the election results. These people are saying they want the results to be given very quickly for us to know the new president we voted for and continue our businesses peacefully. They are surprised at how the dates for releasing the results keep on changing, and they need to know who is the president so they can relax. The current President Joseph Kabila, who has been in the office since 2001, was barred from running in this election, which should lead to the DRC's first democratic transfer of power. Voting on December 30th was mostly peaceful. However, many Congolese fear that a disputed result could spark unrest, as was the case after 2006 and 2011 elections. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News on Rwanda DRC border.
Cameroon's top female football star has opened an academy to teach the sport to girls. The school is the first of its kind in Cameroon, where football is still largely considered a boys' sport. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports on the Rails Football Academy in Yaoundé.
Le physique, c'est la confiance en soi.
Cameroon women's footballer Raissa Fedjou urges a group of 80 girls aged 5 to 16 to have the confidence to become professional players. Nicknamed the Indomitable Lioness, Fedjou is helping to drill the young footballers at Yaoundé's Amadou Ahidjo Stadium. They are hoping to be selected to join the Rails Football Academy, the first in Cameroon for girls, which opened on January 4. Fedjou says they must be ready even to play against male football stars like Cameroon striker Samuel Eto'o or the French national team's Kylian Mbappé. Among the girls who traveled from all over Cameroon for tryouts is 16-year-old Christine Wautier from the western town of Chang.
I'm there because we have heard about the academy created by the international football player called Engaramut Gael. We are there because we try our best to be like her. You have the opportunity to be an international. Maybe if we are selected, we can stay there and work hard to be like her.
Gael Engaramut, a 27-year-old football star, never had any formal training. But she says having a football academy for girls will develop Cameroon's female players into world stars.
The foundation have an objective to promote women football, so we can see the impact in 2016 here with the African Cup. I was so impressed. I say I have opportunity to open this foundation. I can do it.
As a young girl, Engaramut had an early passion for football. Her family rejected her love of the game because football was considered a boy's sport. But Engaramut's determination took her to play not only at the national level, but also with a Norwegian club. Gislaine Beben, one of the coaches selecting players for the academy, says most of the girls show talent.
I was surprised today and I'm very happy because I train with my young sister and all that girls have good talent. So I think when the guy put that that academy, I think that that girl receive a good good formation and they're going to have good talent.
Rails Football Academy manager Frank Happy says they will choose 18 players for each age category. He says they have prepared a training program that does not clash the girls' academic progress. Formal education, he says, will be vital not only in the girls' lives, but also to their careers as professional players. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song You Are One in a Million by Justin Silpemwin. We've been listening to Justin Simpleman with the song You're One in a Million. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for making us a part of your evening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
One in a million, you're better than them, my baby.
One in a million, you're better than them, my love. One in a million, you're better than them.